So 2021 is now behind us, and we're starting the new year in 2022. So before we get to the first episode of the year, I just want to say thank you all so much for your support throughout this past year. It's been absolutely amazing. The podcast has seen enormous growth. I want to try to see if we can try to grow that same type of growth on YouTube. So we're going to try to step that up as well. So if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and come along for the ride. Now, for my podcast listeners, I just want to say again, thank you so much. It's been absolutely amazing. The reviews and the subscriptions and all of that have been super helpful to help us grow the show. Please continue sharing with your friends and family. Check out our social media pages, join our Facebook group, get in the conversations, get involved. And if you get a chance, please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review if you haven't done so already. Let's kick off 2022 really strong with my interview with Michael Gilmore. Let's go.
This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 75.
If you threw in the question, what is your opportunity cost, into those questions, 99% of the world is going to have a blank look on their face, right? You know the answer to what your opportunity cost is. I know the answer to my opportunity cost. That's the fundamental building block of investing.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today's guest is Michael Gilmore. And right now we're going to talk a little bit about how Michael got started as the $7 millionaire. So he had worked in finance for more than 20 years, selling billion-dollar deals and managing the assets of some of the world's smartest investors. The concept was born when his teenage daughter asked him a question and he didn't know the answer to. What's the smallest amount of money you can save every day to become a millionaire in your lifetime? He was genuinely surprised by the answer he calculated and redid the calculations over and over again to double check. You only need to save $7 a day and invest them for 7% returns to become a millionaire through a 50-year career. So this is like a previously magical number that $1 million, it's something that we all assume would require a jackpot or game show winnings, was actually within reach for more than half the people in the world. So this is absolutely amazing. Awesome background. Really excited to talk to you today, Michael. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. You make my background sound way more exciting than I make it sound. So that's superb. Thank you very much.
I'm excited talking about it.
Yeah, it was exactly that moment. If I give you the background, I realized my daughter was 17. She's going to go off to college next year. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in finance, but I've not only been working in finance, but I've also been doing some training with like migrant workers and on financial literacy. And I realized she didn't know what they knew because no school had bothered to teach this. And so I was working with her step by step. And we got to the point of getting to 4% rule, 25 times your spending. And she's like, okay, what if I need $1 million? How much do I need to save if I need to get there? I was like, obviously you need to save $1 million, but how do you get there? Because that's an interesting part, right? Because a lot of people are like, I want to be a millionaire, means they want to spend like a millionaire, but you have to save and through your saving and investment, $1 million. But just pulled out the spreadsheet, calculated it. I was looking at it and thinking, I think if I'd known this when I was 20, I'd have had a lot more money by now. Because you just assume this kind of number is out of reach. It's like $7. What is your daily decision that could put that away? It's tiny. There's a tiny daily decision that could give you an extra $7.
That's how the $7 millionaire was born, was from a simple question. But I'd like to talk a little bit more about you and your background. So how did you get to the point where, you know, before this question came up and you started this journey, your own personal journey, tell us where it all started for you. Like, how did you, besides that question, become the $7 millionaire?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Where this began was I was a journalist before I worked in finance. So I've been in finance now almost 25 years. And before that, I was doing postgrad research, a little bit of freelance journalism. And I had a job offer, and the job offer fell through. And I was actually, I kind of then moved into having another job offer from places like Bloomberg, Dow Jones, and I was working on that. And a friend of mine said to me, don't do that. You're going to get put on the finance desk. You're going to be talking to analysts. You're going to be asking them questions. You won't know what the answers mean because no financial journalists do. Sorry, finance journalists. But it was, I was like, okay, you could become an analyst instead, and you'll get paid 5 times more. And that last bit really resonated, obviously. And so I thought, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go. I got a job as an analyst. And I thought, like, I'd get like a 2-3 month period before I had to start work. And literally I was told start Monday. So I go to the bookshop, grab a couple of books. I remember one of them was called Pocketbook MBA. I've never seen it again since. I just digested the whole thing that weekend, went all the way through it, showed up on the Monday. And then within a couple of weeks, I'm like, hey, none of that stuff was actually as hard as I thought it was. There, I'm doing this. There's obviously stuff I've learned in the last 20 years, but the thing that I was scared of, I'd learned in that very short period of time, and it wasn't very complicated. And then I started thinking, hold on, it's also really powerful. This is life-changing. I've learned things here that are going to change my life. And I knew it as I'd learned them and I was more confident with them. I knew this was going to change the way I think about my money, about the job I do. Everything is going to change from what I've learned in the last couple of weeks at that point. And then I got angry because I thought, how did I spend 15 years in education and no one bothered to teach this? I'm just genuinely angry. And that still sits with me today. I'm going to smile through it, but I'm genuinely still angry that my own daughter got through 15 years of education and no one bothered to teach her this stuff. And so that, when I could, I started working in financial literacy. And as I mentioned earlier on, that kind of kicked off with migrant workers, because these are the people who've left their countries. They've left their families behind to try and change poverty one family at a time. And if you can help them, you really change the world. You can change their lives. And the research I've seen says that only 5% of them go home with the money they thought they were going to go home with. So if you can change that to 10%, you're doubling the impact. If you can change it to 20% again. So that was why I was working with them. And then it rolled into helping my daughter out because she needed to know the same stuff. She didn't know it.
That's powerful stuff right there. And it's something I've talked about on my show several times in the past, is how financial literacy is not something that's taught in schools. And it's absolutely mind-boggling, because when we give our children an education, the whole point is to get them set up to go live in the real world. And here we are, day one in the real world, after they finish school, they don't know how to write a check. They don't know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know how to pay bills. It's wild. It's one of those reasons why I homeschool my kids. And financial literacy is part of their curriculum, and they have to learn it. They have no choice. They're going to learn what compound interest is and why Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world. It's super important. And so I want to point out a couple of things that you said, because I like to sit here and take notes while we're talking. It's not that hard, but you were able to read a book over the weekend. You were looking at this job on a Friday. They told you to come to work on Monday, and you read a book over the weekend, just completely digested it, showed up Monday and said, this really isn't that bad. So it's not complicated, but it's really powerful. And like you said, and then the other thing that you said that really stuck out to me, and this is one of the key things that I think every guest I've had on the show all says the same thing. You changed your way of thinking. You changed your mindset. Mm. You changed how you look at money, right? That is the most important thing, because if everybody just grew up the way society has us grow up through the education system, you're basically indoctrinated to be a 9-to-5 worker your entire life. Right. So you got to break the mold somewhere. You got to be able to retire. And to be able to do that, you need financial literacy. You need to learn. So I really appreciate the fact that you have such a strong passion for financial literacy. It's the same reason why I'm doing this podcast and have awesome people like you on the show.
One of the things I love about this sector, this subject, what I love about it is, like, most subjects, most sectors you get into, everyone's in competition with each other. None of us are in competition with each other. We know that this is, like, the whole world needs to know this. We're in the 1%, the 2%. I don't believe these data that say that half the world or a third of the world is financially literate. They're not. The questions that are being asked are numeracy questions more than they are financial literacy questions. If you throw in the question, what is your opportunity cost, into those questions, 99% of the world is going to have a blank look on their face, right? You know the answer to what your opportunity cost is. I know the answer to my opportunity cost. That's the fundamental building block of investing. Is, okay, I could do this, but that would be better. Done. This is how you learn to invest. And that's where I feel if that were taught in schools, people would be making decisions about their whole lives better. Because opportunity cost is actually how we should think, but we're not taught that. And the ideal place would be to teach it in financial literacy classes. Yeah, I love this space too, because I just feel like we all know we've got the rest of the planet to talk to, and we're not in competition. And the more we help each other, the more people find out this stuff, and we grow the gang, right?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it's not a competition. And one of the things that I love since really diving into this niche or this sector is just everyone I've come across is always willing to help, always willing to teach, always willing to help people learn. It's just, it's amazing. There's other things, like if you were going to like specific career fields where competition is fierce and everyone's trying to get to the top. When it comes to investing and taking care of your own finances, there is no end. There is no top. Not everybody can be Jeffrey Bezos, right? Not everybody could be the world's richest man or woman. But what you can be is somebody who always strives to get better every day and just keep working at it and keep working at it. You don't need to be super rich to live a good life. The key thing is financial independence. You don't need to be a multimillionaire. But if you are at a point in your life where you can have all of your expenses covered without having to do anything because of your passive income and because of the actions you took earlier in life, it puts you at a spot where you're financially independent, and that's true freedom, because financial independence is true independence, because you don't have to worry about going to work. You don't have to worry about struggling to put food on the table or things like that. You can go and enjoy life because you've set yourself up that way. So that's one of the key things and why it's super important. And actually, that's one of the things I want to ask you too, is for you personally. I know we've talked about this a little bit, about financial literacy being so important, but why do you think financial literacy is so important?
There's a couple of reasons. The first one I'm going to touch on, because I think you've helped me, like I'm actually in the process of writing the next book. And the bit I was working on today, literally before we spoke, is a section on how much is enough. And one of the things about how much is enough, we talk about hedonic adaptation, lifestyle creep, whatever you want to call it, our entire human history, we've never had a school of philosophy that says that much is enough, unless you excluding Buddhism. Buddhism said nothing is enough, which is hard. And actually, one of the things I love about Buddhism is the maths on that is they're the only ones that can explain what heaven is. If heaven is infinite happiness, that's something divided by nothing. If you want nothing, impossibly happy, the key word being impossible. But I was actually working on that because I feel like financial FIRE, or particularly financial independence, for the first time in human history, we answer that question. How much is enough? 25 times your spending. That is enough. That's all you need to get. Now you're independent. You can go with this. You've got income coming in. That's amazing. That's such a powerful answer for humanity. That one thing all on its own. The second thing I'd say that I think is crucial with where we are in the world today, and I don't think it matters what side of the political spectrum you're on. I think we all know that the inequality is just increasing and increasing. But there was a story in the Financial Times, right? So we know it's in the Financial Times. This is not talking to the poor people of the world, and it's not talking Marxism. It was a story about how the parents of the kids in the most elite, richest school in the UK are complaining that they can't guarantee getting their kids into the best university anymore. And you think, this is the school that educated 21 of the UK's 60 prime ministers, 70 prime ministers, right? It's that school. And you think, even these people are complaining about inequality. And if you think through, why would that happen? Why would the rich be complaining about inequality? It's because the income curve has become a cliff. We are all on a cliff. Now, you, me, people in the FIRE movement, we've worked out how to live on that cliff. You take a few steps back with your FIRE move and you say, okay, I only need this much to live on. And then I need 25 times that much. And then I'm good, away from the cliff edge. Everyone else who's spending every penny they get to maintain a lifestyle, they're on there with their fingernails. Like the middle class has almost vanished from the US and from the UK and from the Western world. Like the old fashioned middle class, like we grew up with, our parents were, our grandparents were, that's like you get a nice job, white collar, you'll make enough, you'll have a nice lifestyle. Now, because things have become, since Thatcher, Reagan, things have become so efficient, that steep curve is super efficient. But everyone's just desperate. We have to give people the tools to live in that world. We can't just create that world and not give them the tools to live on it. And the tools for that world is financial literacy. You've got to know how to exist in this world. There's no point having dog eat dog if you haven't taught your dogs to fight. Just give people the tools. Right? And that will level the curve a little bit, because you and me, we feel okay being in this world because we've learned these lessons. And all that 1% that is maybe properly financially literate, we've learned those lessons. Now, I could get out there and campaign for universal basic income or socialism or whatever, but what I say there isn't going to have any impact on anyone's life. I'm one guy. But what can I do? I can give you the tools, right? I can give my own daughter the tools and then publish the book and give everyone's daughter the tools. This is how you step away from the edge of that cliff. And that to me is what I feel is financially literate. Literacy is so important. Just give people the tools for the world we actually live in. Yeah. Not the world we think we live in. The world we actually live in needs these tools.
Yeah, that's huge. And it's amazing, like you said, like throughout all this time where this steep curve came from, that we still have not got to the point where it's become a basic education, that this is mm-hmm. something that should be taught to children. And one of the reasons why I teach this to my children, because I want them to grow up and do better than me in the future, or at least have the tools to do it. If they don't want to, that's fine. I want to know that I gave them everything in my power to go and build whatever they want to build in life. And I think this is the biggest thing, is giving them the tools and the know-how on how to do things like this. So with that being said, so you've really like stomped how powerful and why financial literacy is so important. But what is it that got you started on your own journey right now to teaching people about money and financial literacy?
Yeah, I mean, so that it sat inside me. As I described it earlier on, the anger. I think it came out right. A little bit there talking about the income curve as well. I normally hide there a little bit better than that. But so that had always sat inside me. And then a really good friend of mine, she actually runs she now runs a university in the US. She's principal there, but she'd gone to the board of this migrant worker organization. She's a Filipina lady. And this was mainly as a migrant workers that she was helping were mainly Filipinas in Singapore. And she asked me to just take a look at the courses they were teaching and say, look, come in and teach them. Tell me if they're good. Because by that point, I was a fund manager. I'd been working in finance for 15 years. And she just wanted my eye over whether this was the right thing to be teaching. There was a lot of stuff that was good. It was okay. But a lot of stuff was wrong. And then she moved me towards looking at the entrepreneurial side of things and doing their entrepreneurship classes. And I devised a whole course, which I still think is my best work. It's still stuck in a drawer somewhere. But my best work was on the kind of basic entrepreneurship. One day it'll come out. I think it's really good. But I was teaching that, and I taught like a couple of groups of classes that. And then in one class, I'm looking, and one of the nice things about teaching face to face is you can really see when people go dead behind the eyes. You can't see over Zoom, right? You know when someone's not listening in a real time class. And I was realized like half the class just isn't listening. And this is bad because these are like migrant workers that get one day off a week. They're giving up this day to come and get taught by me. And something I'm saying just isn't landing properly. So kind of asking a bunch of questions. Why is this not landing? Trying to get to the bottom of that. And I realized half the class isn't saving money. I'm teaching entrepreneurship and I'm not saving. I said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not teaching you how to become an entrepreneur if you don't know what saving is, because it's just dangerous. It's a line I use about financial inclusion, and I shouldn't say it to Americans because obviously I'm a Brit and you know how we feel about gun control. But I say like financial inclusion without financial education is like gun inclusion without gun education. If you have financial inclusion, if you don't educate people, it's just going to lead to credit card debt, consumer debt, because debt's where the money is for institutions. That's what it's going to lead to. And I was like, I'm not going to teach you entrepreneurship if you're not saving. You've got to know the basics first. So I went back and looked at what was wrong with because these people had all been through their basic personal finance courses. The people I was teaching, something wasn't landing in there. They weren't changing their behavior. So that's where I really went back and said, okay, what is it? And I realized it's not enough to talk to people about financial literacy. Financial literacy is missing. A lot of financial literacy is missing a very big gap. And it's psychology. The stuff we talk about in financial literacy is really simple. most of it is you go from zero to one. It's really simple. The psychology is hard. Actually understanding why someone would make that move and change their life and creating that aha moment where people get it. That's the tough part. And one of the kind of analogies I have in life with this is I feel like we're in a school and like financial literacy is being taught on one side of the corridor. And the guy in that class is like, I'm teaching really easy stuff. Why is no one getting this? And he's not looking across the corridor to this class on the other side, which is teaching marketing 101. And the guy in financial literacy is saying, this is what financial literacy does. And the guy in the marketing 101 is saying, don't talk about what it does. Talk about the benefits. Talk about how the customer feels. Give them what they want. And that's what I realized we had to do. And that's one of the reasons I use the term, my name is the $7 millionaire. Yeah, it's true. We sat there and we came up with that with my daughter and I when she asked me that question. But equally, $7 millionaire means something. It's, yeah, millionaire, right? That's the big dream. If you're not a millionaire, that's your dream. But $7 at a time, it can be done. This is so what we've got in there is we've got a big long-term goal and a daily goal. But you can't explain the two going together without thinking about compounding, because you have to use compounding to get in there. So what I've got in there is a message, but I've got the dream built in with the baby step on the way there. That's marketing, basic marketing. And if I look at financial literacy, some of them do it really well. And I have to take my hat off in some ways to like a guy like Ramit Sethi, because what he's done is he's taken all the tricks of the scam trade and actually wrapped it into financial literacy. I don't feel some of his courses are a little bit expensive, what he's giving, yeah. But the most of the, like his book, that's the kind of stuff that people used to sell you for $200, $300, $1,000, and then walk away. I will teach you to be rich is a perfect scam marketing title. But you know what? The reason scams repeat themselves is because they work. It appeals to people. And we need to use that. And that, I think, is probably the most important part of my journey was realizing it's psychology. The fact that I think the maths is easy isn't relevant. It's psychology all the way.
No, that's huge. That's huge. I definitely wrote that down, how important psychology is, right? And how important it is for people to have that aha moment, like you said, right? Because you could sit here and teach financial literacy all day. Well, actually, what you were doing is teaching, you know, entrepreneurship, right? And you're teaching it to someone who's not financially literate. So if they're getting their stuff together and they're going to start a business, but they don't know how to save, they don't know how to invest their money, they're not going to be able to grow that business. It'll fail every time because they're not going to know what to do with the money. They're going to take their profits and they're going to go live their life and then realize, hey, why are we underwater? Because, well, you didn't invest, you didn't do ads, you didn't do what you were supposed to do to keep this business afloat. So, 100%. Yeah, little things like that. But the psychology piece, huge, absolutely huge. Because like you said, you could sit here and talk to somebody till they're blue in the face and they'll just say, yes, you to death, yes, you to death. But if they're not truly understanding it because their mind's not there, it's not going to work. And what you're talking about too with a lot of the stuff with scams nowadays and how appealing it is. When you see all these things online, you Google how to make money online or how to make money from home, and all these things pop up and say, oh, buy my course for $997. They always put that seven on the end because it feels like it's not too much, not too small, whatever the psychology behind it is, like you said. But the reason why things like that happen and the reason why a lot of these people that have these courses are millionaires, it's from the course. It's not from the actual investing or the action that they've taken. It's because they built this product that keeps roping people back in, which to their credit, in a very smart way, but a very not so kind thing to do, right? Because the people that are coming to you are the people that are coming to you for help. Having something like what I do here with this podcast, you could listen to a podcast on any platform and it's free. Mm-hmm. And we bring people on like you that can talk intelligently about these different topics. Anybody can come listen to this show. Anybody can come here and listen to Michael explain where the $7 millionaire came from and why $7 a day, how that can get you there over 50 years. And if you put a little more than that, you could start cutting those years down. So it's super important to understand that there's resources out there that are free and there's different things you could do. There's different Facebook groups you could join. There's different mentorship groups that are free. There's some that you pay for too that are absolutely worth the money because it's also the people that you come together with. It's building that network, right? Your network is your net worth type deal. But at the same time, to get there, you got to build yourself up. So there's plenty of free resources out there. that can help get you there.
One of the best, I'm going to mention it here, because I don't think anyone knows about this, because this organization is classic financial literacy organization, so they do no marketing, but the CFA organization, the Chartered Financial Analyst organization. Now, it costs money to become a chartered financial analyst, and it's detailed and hard. I'm not one. I backed out. So it's sufficiently hard that I have to put my hand up and say it's too hard for me. But they have a fundamentals of investing course that is 100% free. This is the organization that every single person who really wants to work in investing gets a CFA. I have, in my industry, I promise you, we have way more respect for a CFA than we do for an MBA. You could have an MBA from wherever. You got a CFA, you're ahead. Because it's cheap and you've had to work in your spare time to do it. And it's more detailed. The CFA organization has a fundamental investing course, which is 100% free. You can just go on, register. They'll send you the curriculum. They'll send you where you find the details. It takes maybe 40, 50 hours to complete, something like that. But that's it. And that's a result. Like you said, there are amazing resources out there. The one thing I'd say, and this is where we come back to why it should be in schools. The job you do, the job I do, that we're all trying to do, we're trying to spread this information for free, which I love. Before I get to why it should be in schools, one of the things I love about it is I love marketing this, because the marketing message actually is a little bit of education. Yeah, right? If I tell you, if part of my marketing is you can make $1 million by saving $7 a day, and that's my marketing strap line, you just learned something. There you go. That's actually straightforward into
the hook to get somebody to come check it out.
But they've learned it. They've actually learned something right there. Yeah. They know something they didn't know, which is part of financial literacy. And maybe it works as a hook, but even for the one who doesn't, they learned something they didn't know. But the second part to get into why it's so important for schools is, unfortunately, hearing like all this stuff that's free on the internet, all of it, let's say the good stuff, all the well-intentioned stuff, right? All the people like you, like me, like all these people that are trying to help other people. Unfortunately, we're all providing different access points into this. And if you've got no grounding, if you've got no basics, you can come in and think, oh, that's the right place to start. That's what I need to know. And this is how kids end up trading derivatives on Robinhood, because they see that as their first piece of information. If we'd got that in school and someone said to us, okay, this is how you do, this is how you compound. Okay, no one is going to learn the word in school, which is one of my favorite words because it's so hard to say, heteroscedasticity. And no one's going to do that in school. But heteroscedasticity is a really important concept because it's the difference between compounding at an average of 7% returns, because your max is maybe 30% plus year. Your minimum is maybe a minus 15% year, and you average out into that kind of 7-8% return, but you're never taken out of the game. If you stay invested, you're never taken out of the game. You're never going to have a minus 100% year. You are on options. You are going to have a minus 100% year on options. It's going to happen. It's just like tossing a coin. It's just like playing roulette. You're going to have a minus 100% hand. Now,
well, any options or anything like that, that's not something you can just go lightly into. You definitely need to do your research and due diligence before doing something like that.
Exactly. And the problem with it is if you put all your money in, your average return is nowhere near 7%. It's zero. Because if you're taken out of the game, if you have the risk of being taken out of the game in one, let's say it's roulette and you're going to roll every hand, your average return on roulette is zero. Right, because eventually you're taken out and you've got no money left, and that's heteroscedasticity. You could refer to it as asymmetric risk, but it's a very specific asymmetric risk of your actual return becomes zero because of how uneven it is. Now, if you could learn something along those lines, maybe not that word in school, you're going to look at options and know, okay, options is my gambling money. Options is my hedge. Options is how I take a tiny little position and switch it. It's not where I put all my money, right? And that's not where I take all my risk, and I can never expose myself to losing all my money on this. But let's say I think, you know what? I've got all my money in the S&P and I'm thinking it looks a little bit top-ish, but I want to stay in. Do I have a little bit of money where I could say, I could buy a really out of the money put option on the S&P for a very short period of time. And you know what? Then I've just hedged myself on that position. Something as simple as that. Maybe it's you want to buy a property in a particular market and you're looking and go, okay, yeah, I haven't got the down payment yet and I want to save up for it. Maybe I could buy a warrant on a REIT and that just is like sufficiently out of the money. So it's really cheap And if property prices go up, that REIT's going to go up and my warrant is going to fly and I'll have more money in my deposit to do that. And I've hedged out my risk. Now, okay, those are a couple of jumps for people. Maybe that's less than, like, maybe that's not level one financial literacy, but it's not level 10, it's level two, right? And this is stuff that people can understand. If you can go to, if you can lay a bet on a horse race, you can understand this stuff. And that's where I feel, if we taught it in schools and we got everyone from zero to one at school, then they'd be free and be confident to go from level one to two to three to four to five. And that's where school, I think, is, it needs to play this vital role of giving us that basics, like they do with maths and language and everything else they teach us. They give us that basic.
And having that basic education, like that foundation, right? It's a foundational education. It's something you can build upon. It's something that, even if they did nothing more or learned anything more, it's still a foundation that they can rest on that will put them in a good place to retire at a decent age. If you just stick to the foundational principles, you can go deeper. You can dig deeper, learn how to do different things. You talked a little bit about real estate, right? If you didn't have the money for the down payment, there's other options. You can look for a hard money lender. If you know what this, you've got the numbers work and that rate of return is going to be better and you could pay them back soon, it might be in your best interest to do something like that. But that is all based on you having the basics down, having that foundation laid before you start building the frame, the framework of what your investing is going to look like. So that's super important. And you touched on this a little bit. And I want to ask you something else about, especially when it comes to financial literacy. What do you think most people are getting wrong when it comes to financial literacy?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Buzzsprout. The Average Joe Finances podcast recently switched over to Buzzsprout, and I got to say, I am super happy with the progress. Our podcast is now on every single major platform and reaching audiences that we couldn't reach before, which is just super awesome. So thank you to Buzzsprout for being such a great platform. But also I want to say, hey guys, if you sign up for Buzzsprout and you sign up for one of their paid plans using our link, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card. So go check them out. It's averagejoefinances.com/buzzsprout. And we'll make sure the link is in the show notes below.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, okay. I know that, this is an interesting one because it's not what everyone thinks. But it's tempting to say, oh, there's this one thing everyone talks about. And there's this other thing that everyone talks about. I think what people most get wrong is that they forget that everyone else's journey isn't their journey and their journey isn't everyone else's journey. And it's
funny. We talked about that off camera a little bit before we hit the record button. And that's awesome. Yeah. I like that we're synced up with that. It's really cool.
It's because it is exactly that. You see so many people in this. It's well-meaning. Let's say that the biggest mistake that well-meaning people make with financial literacy is to say, hey, what really worked for me was this was what gave me my aha moment. This is the thing that you're the only thing you need to do, and then this will be okay. And it worked for you, and it'll work for other people. It might not work for the person you're talking to. And I'll give you a little bit of background on the stuff I was doing with migrant workers and why I ended up writing stuff for them rather than taking out a Sunday and going teaching them in person. And that was because I don't look like a Filipino domestic worker. I'm not female. I'm not Filipino. It's just they look at me and they go, what the hell can you tell me? The first lesson every Filipino domestic worker comes to Singapore needs to learn is, how do I not send money back to my uncle when he tells me he needs some money to do X, Y, Z? And you know what? I can't answer that question for them. I've heard answers, but they're not my answers. And you have to always back to marketing. Who is my customer? Understand who they are. Is it important that you're teaching or is it important that they learn? If it's important they learn, then it matters so much what I want to teach you. What matters is, how are you going to get into this? What is the thing you're going to find? And that, I think, is that to me, that's the biggest mistake. Too many people, yeah, the old line, they've discovered a hammer, so everything looks like a nail. I think that I still love Charlie Munger's line. So out of everyone, you have to do this. If you work in investing, you have to love Buffett and Munger. But obviously, I'm one of the few that goes, actually, you know what? I'm a Munger guy. I'm a Charlie Munger guy, 100%. And I love the line that Charlie Munger once said about Warren Buffett. Yeah, Warren is one of those guys. He's got a hammer. His genius is identifying nails. He knows what a nail looks like. Genius.
See what the big difference is that you said there, though, where, you know, somebody with a hammer starts to look at everything like a nail. But the difference there with Warren Buffett was he identified the nails. It wasn't, I'm just going to go swing at everything. So I just want to point that out because that's a super key point.
And that's Charlie Munger looking at his best mate and saying, that's what's special about Warren. And that's what we all have to remember. We've all got a hammer. We all know we've got a hammer. This financial literacy is our hammer. And it might be one particular thing. We've got to remember that not everyone is a nail. And that they might need a slightly different introduction to this. And that's what matters. And you just have to remember that we bring them in softly.
You mentioned earlier, everyone's journey is different. The people that you're teaching right now, they're not looking to invest and get to the point where they're going to make millions and millions and millions. They're saying, hey, I need to be able to make enough money to take care of my family back home. I need to be able to send this money back home when needed. How do I get there? So that's their journey. That's what they need to focus on. But the thing is, educating them on how to put themselves in a better spot where maybe they build up some type of passive cash flow that just goes back home and helps them back there. Hey, just put a little bit to the side if you can. Do what you can. Do $7 a day. If that's what it is that you can do.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
You'll love this. Low income level real estate in places like the Philippines can yield 12 to 15%. Now, you imagine you just need to buy a couple of little properties, right? And all of a sudden you run those. You don't need to do fancy entrepreneurship. You just need to save enough to get a couple of little pieces of property that you can rent out to someone in the area. And yeah, then you're good. You're probably generating enough passive income to run the rest of your life. It's that straightforward. And so sometimes when I hear from people, these lessons don't apply to most of the world. These are luxury problems. I'm a rich guy. I'm talking to my rich kid daughter about money. Yeah, it's true. I can't deny that. But I've tried as much as I can to make the lessons universal. And I know for a fact that the things I talk to, the same lessons work with university students. They work with migrant workers. They work because I'm taking it down to that basic universal level. You can't ask me about a Roth IRA because I do not understand them. I don't get into weeds because I've got no need to understand it. I'm not American. Right. I don't earn that. Other people can earn that, but you need to go from zero to one before you can start understanding what those things are. But the basics, universals, are the same from the Philippines to Nigeria to the UK to the US.
Right. And what you do understand is compound interest and how it works and how you can use it to make more money. Same thing works for somebody that is investing in a Roth IRA. It's all about the compound interest. It's about building up from that foundation that we're talking about. I'd like to even say, I know we were talking about it being level one. I would almost say that's level zero. Your ground zero right there, your foundation is that basic financial literacy. Level one is when you start putting that money away into something and maybe getting a small return or just growth. Yeah. Level two is where you're starting to build that passive income, right? This, you got the foundation down, you put the flooring in, and now you're starting to build the framework on the side of the house. And that's when you're starting to see, hey, this is going to be a shelter in the future. This is going to be something that I can live under this roof in the future. Now I just got to work it up to the top and get to the roof. But basic foundation, you're sitting in a spot where you're good.
You're on very dangerous ground. You're talking a very good analogy to someone who's in the middle of writing a book. That might get stolen. So far, I've been working with the metaphor of a path rather than a foundation's the house. But I can see that's going to come back. I'm going to be writing in a couple of days and that's going to come back in here.
That's awesome. That'd be cool. I like real estate. So it always comes back to that for me. But that's the way I've always talked about these things. Like these are foundations, like these principles that you have to follow if you want to get yourself to a point where you're going to be financially free in the future. It's not about getting rich overnight. And I want the next 2 years, I want to be retired. Some people have actually done that in real estate in 2 years, got themselves to a point where they're making enough passive income, they can call it quits. Good for them. Some people can do that. Not everybody can. You still got to build it up over a couple of years. Some people take 5, 10, 15, some people do it for 20 years. The point is, like we said earlier, everyone's journey is different. But the thing is, you have to be on a journey first. If you don't set a path and start walking down that path and you're just walking around without a compass and you don't know where you are, you're just you know, walking through the woods, eventually you're going to come to that cliff, or you're going to be just surrounded by trees and not know where you are, and you're going to be lost for the rest of your life.
You're back in my metaphors now.
That's right.
100%. 100%. And it's interesting because I love hearing real estate guys talk. I have done real estate and I don't know the places. And this is, again, why it's – and real estate has a particular advantage as an asset class to us, the small guys, not the institutional guys. Real estate units at a price point and at a sort of renovation level and a fixer-upper, they don't work for a big organization. You can't – if you're the size of Fidelity or BlackRock – you cannot be buying up a third of the US, which would be the size of your capital base, and fixing it up in one go. It's just not a scalable endeavor. Whereas a single individual
that would destroy the entire market.
Yeah, I'm not trying to encourage them to either. It's actually practically impossible for them to do it. The scale just isn't right. Whereas at a single human scale, it's possible for the small guy to, one, go in, recognize this piece of property is a good deal, two, actually maybe even do the work themselves, and three, flip it. So it makes an enormous amount of sense. And what's even better about that is it's improving the property stock. This is not making the world a worse place. This is making the world a better place when they do that. So this is one of the great things about real estate. One of the problems with real estate, I'm sorry to say this, it is that some people in it have that hammer and they think everything is a nail. And it's, you know what? I live in a country, okay, my apartment, I rent it. I pay less than a 1% yield. Why would I own property in a market where it's a 1% yield? It's literally, I would have to double the amount of money I pay every month to pay the mortgage interest on where I live. It wouldn't make any sense. Now, that's important because I know how to do that maths. Right? And over 25, 30 years, it may go wrong for me. Maybe the market will fly and it'll go wrong. But I know how to do that calculation. I'd like everyone to be that financially literate where they can go, hold on, I borrow 3% and the yield is 15%. Duh. And it's just, but most people can't see the no-brainer. They can't see the no-brainer in either direction because they don't have that basic fundamental. So like I said, real estate is a great asset class, but again, it needs people to understand the basics of it. Okay, how do I assess if it's a great market or not?
Yeah, for me, I can't just go in there and be buying whatever you feel like without doing any type of research. Like with any investment, right? You have to do some type of research. You have to do your due diligence. You have to learn and educate yourself, right?
Yeah.
You can't just say, oh, this house looks like a good fixer-upper. Let me go buy it and fix it up. And it turns out you just spent $400,000 on a house in a neighborhood where houses are around $400,000 to $450,000. You just put $50,000 in it, renovating it. And you turn around and you go to put it on the market and you're selling it for a break-even price or you're losing money. You have to be able to know what those key performance indicators are going to be. You need to know what it is you're going to identify to go in there and make it work. You can't just sit here and fudge the math in your head and do napkin math and say, okay, this is going to work because if I do this, or maybe if I change this, or maybe if I do that. If you have to like really tweak the numbers to get yourself to a point where it's going to be profitable, then you are doing yourself a disservice and it's going to hurt. But if you can go in there and you could do like a basic calculation and just, again, keep it very close to the foundation. If you can keep it there, and it comes back with a profit, then you're probably in a really good spot. You want to try to be as conservative as possible when it comes to that and expect less. But if more happens, that's awesome. So always put yourself in a spot where you're going to be safe and don't sit here and take your life savings and dump it into one property and then it doesn't work out.
Like everyone in the world does. Everyone's buying their dream home, moving towards their dream home as their single property. It's one of the things I love about small real estate investors is they're buying garages. Right? They're buying little rental places. They're buying commercial properties. They're buying little kind of units that they can. Your first unit should not be the biggest gamble you make in your life. That's insane, which is 90% of the property market is people getting the biggest deposit they can so they can buy the house they really like, not thinking about all the maths that you just went through. That's the result of no financial literacy. Good financial literacy people would say, okay, this is an asset class. I need to understand this asset class. Maybe I should do some small bite-sized experiments and learn where I get things wrong and where I get things right. Let me tell you a little story from my day job because I think this is really instructive because it is from my day job. This is not in the book. So we got an investment wrong a few years back. Not that it lost us money. We didn't invest in it and we didn't like it and it went up a lot. And every time it went up, it obviously got more expensive and harder for us to buy it. And so we're looking at it thinking, what do we do? What do we do? And so we sat down. We literally sat down and we went, what were the things we got wrong? And it even got to the point where I found the guy who'd been running the business and then running one big part of it and left. And I got hold of him on LinkedIn. And he's, yeah, I don't work there anymore. Why do you want to talk to me? And I said, I want to talk to you because I want to know how I got that investment wrong. Because it's not like I'm going to stop doing this. I can't just put my head in the sand and say, oh, next time I'll be smarter. Like just by magic. I'll be smarter if I know how I was stupid last time. What did I get wrong? And so we literally wrote a paper internally. So how did we miss this? What did we get wrong? What do we do differently next time? How do we identify what the next time of these things is? And so we know, and if we've got the remaining question marks around this thing, how do we answer those question marks? It was a painful process, but you know what? I come out, I might still miss the next one, but at least I've done my homework. At least I know why I missed that one properly. And that's what everyone should be doing in every asset class they're in, right? Every time you lose money, this is a lesson, right? And you start with a small one. You should not be doing, okay, how much can I afford for a down payment on the house of my dreams at a 90% mortgage? And then that's the house for the rest of my life. Because if it goes down 10%, you lose the money you saved the last 10 years, you're out. And it happens to so many people. There's no opportunity to learn a lesson in what they're doing there. And that, again, financial literacy, these are the basics.
And like you said, too, even what you guys did with your company, just figuring out what it is that you missed and understanding it, that's super important. Because if same thing in real estate, right? If you decided that you were going to go invest in a specific market, then you dropped out because you didn't do enough research. You didn't realize that, oh, hey, they're actually building like an Amazon warehouse here, or the next Tesla Gigafactory is going to be here. And because you missed a small detail, like that property that you thought was too expensive, all of a sudden, 5 years later, after the factory's up and running, and that property has doubled or tripled or quadrupled in value, you're like, how the heck did I not see this coming? Because you didn't do your due diligence. You didn't research the area that you were trying to get into. And I think that's super important. That's why I like a lot of the real estate syndication companies that I deal with right now. They are very huge on that. Like they really research their markets. And that's one of the things that makes them successful because they know what their exit strategy is. They have a good exit plan. They have multiple exit strategies, not just one. And that's the part of the thing that's important too, is having... Sure. When I was talking about before, like going down a path and walking down a path, that's great. A path is never a straight line. Never. Yeah. Right. If it is, then hey, you found the magical path, but there's always going to be, you're going to always come to a crossroad. You're always going to come to a part where it branches off, where you have to make a decision and you have to choose what path you're going to go down. So giving yourself an option where there's multiple that all lead, no matter what, it's going to get you to the same goal at the end. So the winding brick road will always bring you to the Emerald Palace. Just what matters is what path you go down. One might be a little bit longer. One might be a little bit shorter, but a little more risky with a couple cliffs on the side that if you're not careful enough, you're going to fall off the edge. And then there might be that one that's a straight shot, but it's just really long and treacherous.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what path you're going to take and just being able to make an educated decision, not just any decision, but make an educated decision and understand what you're getting yourself into. Because I think we've both said this a bunch of times is no matter what, any type of investment is a risk. There's always risk involved. I think since we talked about nails a lot, that kind of hits the nail on the head.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually, so one of the things in the book, it's good fundamentals, is the investment section. A couple of people said to me, I don't talk about any specific investments at all in the investment section. And what I talk about is I actually just have a new acronym in it, which is RISK with two R's. And I just talk about risk through the whole investment section. Because the whole point of investing is, there is no such thing as taking no risk.
Right.
Putting your money under your mattress is the biggest risk of all, because we know there's inflation, right? So that is a risk, and you just, denial is a risk. You're just denying the risk that's out there. So then you have to take risk. What risks do you take and how do you assess those risks? And that's the most important thing, is how do you assess those risks and how do you become comfortable with risk and how do you take the right risks for you? This is the key to actually investing, is taking the right risk for you.
Yep. The right risk and the right choice. Can I ask you what that acronym stands for? I love acronyms. So I wrote it down, R-I-S-K.
Okay. So So R-I-S-K is risk return. And then the I is for integrity. Now, not a lot of people will talk about this, but what I mean by integrity is it's got to be the right risk for you. Don't take risks that your life doesn't need you to take. Someone might tell you that Tokyo property is like the best market in the world. You don't need that risk, right? If you need that risk, you should take it. If you don't need that risk, don't take it. So taking the right risk for you, like the S&P 500 is the right risk for everyone. These are the biggest 500 companies in the world. So it's the right risk for everyone. We all need to be exposed to the global economy and to global capital. S is for spread, which is just another word for diversification, spread it around. And K is for knowledge. That's how you really reduce your risk, is by knowing more and keep knowing more. And you're never gonna stop. You just said that story I told you about that company, that was last year, 23 years into my investing career. And I'm still going to a guy saying, how did I get your company wrong? What did I do wrong? How did I get that wrong? And I've made investments where, this annoys the crap out of my wife, but we made an investment maybe 12 years ago. And I'll refer to how we got it wrong. And she says, we didn't get it wrong. We love that place. We still own it. Yeah, I didn't do enough research. But we got it. Yeah, we got it right. But I didn't do enough research. I got the process wrong. I should have done more research. I might have made a different investment and got the investment worse. Luckily, I got the investment. But that's not process. I got my process and it still bothers me that I got it wrong. And I'll never do that process ever again. And you have to have that. Again, you see what we're talking about here. If we go back to the beginning, none of this is complicated. And this is a word that I'm using in the new book. It's very important to stress the difference between the word complex and complicated. Complicated is a thing that is inherently difficult to understand. The thing itself is difficult to understand. A complex thing is a thing that is made up of lots and lots of simple things. So it looks hard to understand, but everything in it is actually quite easy. And that's investing. Most things in it are actually pretty simple, but sometimes they get layered one on top, on top, on top, on top. And it looks like, oh, that's too hard to understand, particularly for anyone new coming in. For someone new coming in, it's like, there's all this stuff to know. How do I know that? Okay, don't know it all. Just learn the basics. And that'll give you enough to go, okay, what's next? And what comes after that? And that to me is how we keep moving through this. You asked me another question because I completely lost it.
Yeah, it's all good. So actually, I have just one more question I want to ask you because I think we hit everything I wanted to talk about. But for, let's say we have somebody who is just looking to get started. They're getting ready to build that foundation. They're just about to finish up paying off their debt so they could start investing. Are there any tips or tricks that you would recommend for somebody who's getting started today?
And now I have to explain my entire book because that's what the book for my daughter was about. The thing that you, okay, so the most important thing, you paid off debt. So you've actually already learned the most important lesson, which is you don't need to spend all the money in your salary or in your income. That's one of the things I think is fascinating with people who achieve financial independence is the number of them that arrive there from a debt position. And how the debt doesn't slow down their progress that much. And actually, a lot of them get to FI faster than the people that didn't start with debt because they've learned such an aggressive saving habit to get out of the debt. And then they continue that through. So I'd say that's the first lesson, is knowing that you don't have to spend all your income. Once you've got there, you're so far ahead of the rest of the world. The second thing is, I think it's so important to learn. Okay, so we all know you need an emergency fund. So we tuck that away. Let's get that one tucked away, park that. You need to have an emergency fund. We know that now, particularly after what happened in 2020, we all know why we need an emergency fund. If the next stage for me, I think, is nearly always to understand what an index is and what it does and how that will probably do you fine for most of your equity investing needs. And this is, again, another reason why I don't talk about what I do in the day job, because obviously I do the opposite of that in my day job, but in a very specialized way. But an index for most people, okay, what is it? Top 500 companies in the world. What does that mean? You buy one VTI and all of a sudden the 500 top paid CEOs in the world work for you. That's what that means. You've now tapped into the global economy in the best way possible. That's where you go before you start doing single stock. To me, you can learn so much about single stocks by understanding the index, because in the end, it's how you allocate capital that will make you the most money over time. There's so much risk in single stock that you really need to approach it from an index position. And honestly, I think that gets so many people at 80, 90% of the way there. I think real estate is worth learning because we're all going to have to own it at some point. We all live in it. We have to have somewhere to live. And so that to me is often because you can't put a $500 increment into a house to start with an index, so that it makes sense to be that stage. But then when you've got money in, you've got maybe a down payment that you can put in a small way into real estate. Those two things, you've now got such an enormous part of the global capital system, right? Exposure to them. That will get you there. The only other thing I'd add in is like one of the best tips I've ever heard, which is every time you get anytime you get an increase in income, 50% of the increase goes into saving. And what I love about that is it reminds me, I grew up in the west of England, and we'd go picking fruit, strawberries and stuff in the summer. And you had to pay for what you took out, but you'd eat a ton while you were doing it as well. You're picking strawberries, and it's one for me, one for the guy, right? One for me, one for the basket, one for me, one for the basket. And the same thing, it's such a simple rule, right? You get a $50 raise, 25 for my savings, 25 for me. Now, the reason that works is because the 25 is still a raise, right? It's still an improvement in your standard of living. Mm-hmm. Gradually, it improves. The 25 into your savings is going to boost your savings in a way that if you put 50 in, your standard of living is slowly going to come down. It's just going to happen.
Like, you're not keeping up with inflation at that point.
Yeah. But if you put 50 into your spending, you're never going to increase your savings. So 50-50, one for me, one for the man. That, I think, works for me. That's like the one that I think the simplest little thing.
Yeah, I know people that will take 100% of their pay raise and put it into savings, but I like the 50%. I think it's much more manageable because there is an expected quality of life increase when you get a pay raise and things like that. So that's fantastic. All right, Michael.
I'm going to interrupt you just because it's all about the psychology. It's all about the psychology, like we said before. Exactly. And the 50-50 works on the psychology.
Yep. Just like you were nailing down before, psychology, it has to do a lot with your mental state, where it is that what flips that switch for you. Like you even said it earlier at the very beginning when we first started talking about, and actually I have it here in my notes when we were talking about, we were talking about how learning how to do this is not difficult, but it's very powerful. And the key thing that you did is you change your thought process, you change your mindset. And that might be the hardest yet easiest thing for anybody to do. Because to change your mindset, you're going to have to start breaking old habits. You're going to have to get past some of those spending habits that you might have and things like that. But once you do it and you realize how easy that was, that change just comes naturally. Okay, I have to ask you the most important question. And this is because we've had an awesome, amazing conversation. I really enjoyed so much of it. My listeners, I'm sure they're loving it right now too. And they're going to want to know a little bit more about Michael and where they can find some information about you. They're going to want to know more about who this $7 millionaire is or what they could find, what the $7 millionaire is all about. So if you could, please share with us. Do you have a website, social media that people can check out? That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So the book that you can see right behind me, The Happy Ever After. So that's by the $7 millionaire. There's links to get to that on the website, which is $7millionaire.com. Occasionally active on Twitter, and I don't understand Instagram. You'll see stuff on Instagram, but that's not me. If there's stuff on Instagram, that's an intern. That's where you can find me. And there should be another book coming out middle of next year, which, touch wood, fingers crossed, would be similar kinds of lessons, but looked at in a totally different way, as we get to try and get inside someone else's psychology. That one was getting inside my daughter's psychology. This will be to get inside someone else's psychology.
Yeah, different paths. So, yeah, so is Happy Ever After, Financial Freedom Isn't a Fairy Tale, is it a children's book?
It's literally the publisher, Wiley, was like laughing when they asked me, like, who's the target market? I said, my 17-year-old daughter. And there's a target market of one. I know exactly who it's for. I've seen it. I now know it's being read by 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds. Unfortunately, when like a 50-year-old reads it, they go, I wish I'd learned this earlier. If you go on Amazon and you read through reviews, like I think maybe 3/4 of the reviews say, I wish I'd learned this 25 years ago. And I say to them, give the book to your kids, right? That's what it was written for. And so it's aimed at that era, that age where, you know what, if you're 18, 19, 20, you're going to be putting this to use really soon. But it's just written in a way that you can understand the whole thing. So my daughter, art student, writes plays, going to need money because she's never going to earn it. So she's going to have to save every penny she gets. So how do you take someone like that and get them all the way to understanding FI? And that's the whole journey of the book, is like from real basics, the whole journey of the book. So it can't really be like an 8-year-old because they can't use it. But like someone who's 17, 18, they're going to use it soon.
Great stuff. So I wanted to ask because I've got my two daughters as they're getting up in age, I've got them reading different financial literacy books. So this one might have to get added to the curriculum when they get a little bit older. So
how old are they now?
They're going to be actually turning here soon, very soon, 12 and 10.
The 12-year-old might be ready for it if she's read out the stuff on money. She might be ready for it very soon. It's got fairy tales woven through it. It's deliberately worked to just keep them interested.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, I'm going to make sure I get all those links in the show notes for everybody that's listening right now. If you're driving, don't write that stuff down. Wait till later and copy and paste it out of the show notes. Or as you heard him say, it's $7millionaire.com. Check it out. Michael, it was an absolute pleasure having this conversation with you today. With you being in Singapore and me being in Hawaii, technology is amazing. This was an absolute treat.
It was wonderful to be on here. And I want to say thank you as well for doing this. I think one of the biggest services, I've written a book for Target Market of One. One of the great things about guys like you doing these podcasts is you're aggregating, which we need. This industry needs this because we're not taught it in school. We need people like you that can talk to maybe, I don't know, whether you talk to 50, 100, 200 people a year and gather that information for people and help people see it. So I think it's really important. So thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And we'll get this information out there for everybody. It's been an absolute pleasure, like I said.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decision.